Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy it. This story is part one of a two-part presentation of the story of the bloody 1925 jailbreak that was one of the worst in Oregon history. The conditions that resulted in this jailbreak, by the way, were established by a Ku Klux Klan guy. Well, we'll get to that in part two. Meanwhile, here's part one. It was a typical balmy August evening at the Oregon State Penitentiary. The bell had rung for supper, so inmates were streaming out of their cells and heading toward the dining hall for the evening meal, as they always did. But on this particular evening, four prisoners hung back from the throng, and when the last prisoner had rounded the corner out of sight, they doubled back, hurrying into the cell that had been assigned to one of their number. Working feverishly with an auger stolen somehow from the prison's shops, they cut a hole in the roof and pulled and boosted each other up through it. One of the most legendary jailbreaks in Oregon history had just started, and the die had been cast that would lead to the men's doom. It was August 13, 1925. Not one of the prisoners would live to see 1929. The prisoners were Burt Oregon Jones, a notorious highway robber from southern Oregon, James Willows, a burglar from Umatilla County, Tom Murray, a Lane County man serving 20 years for assault with a deadly weapon, and Ellsworth Kelly, a bank robber just starting a 20-year sentence for aiding in a previous prison break. By the way, Ellsworth Kelly, the bank robber, was not related to Ellsworth Kelly, the artist, the mid-century painter of large-format works of modern abstract art. Ellsworth Kelly the artist spells his last name differently than Ellsworth Kelly the bank robber. Prison breaks, or attempted ones, were surprisingly common in 1925. A new prison administration, appointed by Governor Walter Pierce, had been installed the previous year, and Pierce had stocked the place with political appointees with little real experience running a prison. One exception was the warden, A.M. Dalrymple, who had worked for Oregon State Penitentiary before. Dalrymple, though, was kind of an exception that proved the rule. He'd been fired from that job with the approval of then-Governor Oswald West, who publicly disparaged him as white-livered. Dalrymple, upon resuming the role of warden, had almost immediately moved to prove West right by relaxing discipline and ordering all the guards to avoid shooting prisoners during escape attempts. After word about that got around, as you can imagine, busting out of the joint became almost a popular pastime for the inmates. Indeed, all of the men but Willows had made an escape the previous year. In that attempt, they had unlocked a door with a key Kelly had made in the prison shop and then sawn through the bars on a basement window and climbed a guard tower while the watch was being changed, leaped off the high wall, and run to the road where they had commandeered a car from a motorist driving by. They'd gotten away but had only managed to elude the posses for a few days. This time they hoped to slip through the dragnet and get clear of the state. The goal was to get back east. On this occasion, Tom Murray was leading them to the outside, but their escape plan was Oregon Jones's brainchild, or so the others later claimed for reasons that will soon become clear. The four of them hurried to the edge of the roof and tied off a length of rope which they had carefully spliced together from bits collected here and there over the previous months. Then, one by one, they stealthily descended. At the bottom of the wall, they split and ran around the cell block, two on each side, making for turnkey James Nesmith's office where the guns were stored. As they crossed the yard, Warden Dalrymple, on his way back from dinner, saw Murray. He hurried toward the turnkey's office, then stopped short. Two of Murray's colleagues were between him and the office, both armed with shanks made from files. He turned and ran back to his residence to grab his shotgun. Meanwhile, the convicts had made it to the turnkey's shop and burst in. The plan had been to make Nesmith open the gun locker at knife point, but Oregon Jones, in a moment of enthusiasm, had broken the turnkey's jaw with his fist, and now he was out cold on the floor. So Ellsworth Kelly bashed in the door of the cabinet with a piece of furniture, and they all helped themselves. Two of them then opened fire on the north guard tower, raking it with bullets. The guards in the tower shot back, but they were at a huge disadvantage. Rifle bullets passed right through the tower walls, whereas the turnkey's office was made of stone. When the guns stopped speaking from the North Tower, the men left the office and ran for it, clambering over the wall, making for the outside. As they did so, Warden Dalrymple arrived with his shotgun and sent both barrels after one of the fleeing forms. The runner was seen to waver, but it was a long-distance shot and didn't have enough stuff to stop him. But then John Davidson, a wall guard, arrived on the scene with his rifle. With this, he shot Bert Oregon Jones as he came off the wall, hitting him in the leg and immobilizing him. Jones waved the others on, and after that he apparently shot himself in the head. So then there were three, running through the twilight, making for the trees. They ran directly to the Oregon State Hospital, or the Insane Asylum as it was then called, where they came into a significant spot of luck. A yellow taxi had just pulled up to pick up a patient who was being discharged. Soon they were on their way in the commandeered cab. Behind them, they left the bodies of the North Tower guards, James Holman and Jay Sweeney, and a third guard, Lute Savage, seriously wounded. As they fled, the other inmates in their cells whistled and shouted and rattled their bars in support. We'll talk about how these convicts fared as fugitives from justice, and how they were recaptured, and also the critical role that the Ku Klux Klan played in setting the whole disaster up, tomorrow in part two of this two-part presentation. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Say, are you an audiobook listener? And do you enjoy old pre-war pulp stories like Tarzan of the Apes and Conan the Barbarian and The Call of Cthulhu and stuff like that? Or do you like early Victorian penny dreadful fiction like Sweeney Todd and Varney the Vampire and Highwayman Dick Turpin? If so, you might enjoy the audiobooks I have out there in the world. The easiest way to find them is for the search for my name on audible.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.